precise as it might be, sometimes contract language doesn't quite cover a particular situation. While it would probably make a contractor's life easier just to stick to the contract language, that's not always an option. Tim Sullivan is a partner with the law firm Thompson Coburn and author of the blog A Government Contractor's Ten Commandments. Today he tackles the ninth commandment, be prepared to reciprocate. It's not just the words on the paper that matter, it's the relationship between a contractor and its government customer.
This is a little unusual. When I had someone was reading the commandment just this morning and said, "Well, we're not talking about bribes, are we?" And
that was exactly my question.
Yeah, let's get that out of the way right away. No, we're talking about the give and take that goes on between the people representing both parties in a contractual relationship. What you need to remember is we do have contracts between us, but over time, this series of contracts builds a relationship. And the lawyers and the judges will tell you that you've got every contract has to be interpreted strictly according to its own terms and has to stand on its own 2 feet. What happens on other contracts shouldn't really matter, although it can at times. But the fact is, relationships are built up over time, and many things happen in the course of a relationship in a course of having several contracts, and they don't always happen the way people expected. And sometimes you have to be flexible in terms of the way you look at contract performance and what you can live with and what you can accept, and that's on both sides. So there's a lot of give and take that you may not have documented, but people do favors for each other. Someone has an emergency and a special request, you say, "Fine, all right, go ahead." And that's how relationships are developed over time. And the point is that while you can't always extract your consideration or what you're supposed to get in exchange at the moment, in a relationship, over time, there'll be an opportunity for the other side to reciprocate. That's what this is all about.
So I guess the danger might be is to not always be straying from the contract language. You don't want to take advantage of that ability, nor do you want the other party to take advantage of it.
Exactly. And that would set up what's called a course of conduct that could lead to a court concluding that one side or the other waived their particular rights under the contract. So that's true. Now, we're talking about the occasional situations that arise in the course of a contract, and I give a couple examples in this commandment. For example, if the widgets that I'm supposed to deliver aren't due until April 15th, but I get a call on March 15th from my contracting officer who says, "Tim, I know they're not due till the 15th, but is there any way you could ship 5 units early? It would make the Admiral very happy, and it would solve a lot of problems." Now, if I've got 5 units ready to go on the floor, and this really isn't a problem for me, that's the kind of thing I'm probably going to do my best to accommodate their request on. I'm probably not going to demand money, which I'd be entitled to in terms of an equitable adjustment to compensate for this change. But it's an opportunity to do them a favor. And Tom, there are 2 things going on here. If I need a favor in the future, I don't have to say to this person if she and I have a good relationship, "Do you remember on March 15th when you called me?" I don't have to do that. They remember. We've got a relationship. But secondly, we also know that at the end of every important contract, the government's going to be writing a performance evaluation. And there are certain criteria and certain things they're looking for. And one of the questions they want to address is whether this contractor is committed to the government's best interests. And I think an example like this is a good thing for a contracting officer to remember, saying, "Oh, yes, we had an early delivery request one time, and they satisfied it with no problems at all." That's the kind of thing you're setting up.
And what if someone asked you to do something along those lines? At what point do you maybe raise your hand and say, "You know what, you're asking more than I feel comfortable being able to deliver"?
Yes, and see, what happens, typically they want something a lot earlier or earlier than it's supposed to come in, for example. And that sets up what's the possibility for what we call an acceleration claim in government contracts. That is, it costs money for me to do what it takes to meet your early delivery demands. And that's a well-recognized basis for equitable adjustment, and good contracting officers understand that. I mean, many will start the conversation with, "Send me a proposal, let me know what it's going to cost, but this is what we need." So you're right. This is when it's too much, then the company has to make a business decision as to whether or not they want to demand or request an equitable adjustment.
Tim Sullivan is a partner at the law firm Thompson Coburn and author of the blog The Ten Commandments for Federal Contractors. Today we're talking about the ninth commandment, be prepared to reciprocate. And so underlying everything you're saying is the fact that contracts are really only part of a relationship that you have. And if you can establish a good human relationship of trust, then the contract can be a little bit more flexible, perhaps, than what the words on it say.
Well, that, I think it's right. It's a reminder that contracts are one thing, people are another. And this is a business where people make decisions. People are the ones who either want something different that's in, than what's in the contract, or someone wants to relaxation from what's in the contract. And the parties have to see what they can live with to try to accommodate each other to get from A to Z. If every nuance, every wrinkle during contract performance was something that had to be documented by an amendment to the contract with the lawyers and everybody going up the chain for approval, nothing would ever get done. There's a lot of flexibility in the course of contract performance, and you are right. The ability to do this is tied in large part to the relationship between the parties. And that is why you and I have had this discussion probably two or three times in the last couple of months. You've got to do something early in your contract relationship to establish a personal relationship with the people on the other side. And I don't mean anything improper. I don't mean regaling them in Las Vegas for three nights at a casino. I mean a visit, meetings at a trade show, whatever it might be, to make sure we humanize each other and start to build a sense of trust and cooperation on a human level.
That's a good question. What are some things that you can legitimately and comfortably do, comfortably in the perception of a federal contracting officer or some party connected with the government customer? What can you do to establish that kind of trust relationship and that human relationship without violating the very, very strict ethics rules that they operate under?
It always depends on the context. If I'm trying to get an agency interested in a new product or service that we think they'd like, we can ask for meetings with the right people. We can go to the agency job fairs that they have or trade fairs that they might have or the contractor fairs. If you look at the Federal Acquisition Regulation in FAR Part 15 that covers negotiated procurements, FAR 15201 talks about one-on-one meetings, requests for information, all kinds of opportunities exist. If I've got a contract, there's nothing wrong with, in addition to any required meetings, they might have quarterly meetings between the parties, for example, to calling up the contracting officer and saying, hey, I'm in Philadelphia, or I'll be there next Tuesday on other business. Can I stop by and let's talk about how we're doing? Well, I think that's the action of a contractor that's committed to the government's best interest. I really do. And that translates well to good evaluations.
All right, and how can that help in some situations where you might need a little bit more leverage than you actually have, technically?
Well, again, it's a matter of trust and confidence in one another. If I am cold calling you, that is, I'm calling you for the first time, you don't know me from Adam, and I'm asking for a favor, the likelihood of getting that favor from you over the phone, I would say, is slim. On the other hand, if you and I have known each other for couple of years, we've been in a couple of different situations together that haven't been easy things to resolve, but we've resolved them, and we've learned to respect each other. Now, if I'm asking you for a favor, there's a much better chance that, as long as it's a reasonable favor, that it's going to be granted. The one thing that I'll always remember is one of my bosses at CIA who once told me that people live up to commitments made to other people better than institutions do. That was a huge lesson for me, both as a contract negotiator and as a lawyer. And I've seen countless times since then where if Joe Blow or Josephine Blow tells me something, by God, they're going to make sure it happens. And that's important. As most people will tell you, Tom, just shaking someone's hand doesn't normally cover anything anymore, but there's still a lot of that going on. If a man or a woman that I trust gives me their word on something, to me, that's in the bank. And that's still an important part of getting business done.